You are listening to the eWatchman Podcast with your host, Robert King.
Welcome to another episode of the Watchman's Post podcast. This is episode number 58, I believe, recorded in the middle of February in the year 2015. It's the part of the winter that really starts wearing on me, living here in the Northlands now, as I do. You look at the calendar and you think, well, spring is only a month away, but it's a long month, believe me. Anyway, at least I don't live in New England where there's like, 6 or 8 feet of snow now and it's still coming. Hang in there, guys. Spring will come eventually, I'm certain of that. Well, usually I have a list of questions before me that is the basis of the program. I don't have any list in front of me now, but I have a few questions that I didn't get to in previous programs, and one as recently as yesterday, someone was asking me my opinion on ISIS and their determination to go after Rome and all of this. Previously, several weeks ago, someone had asked me how to account for the long period of the Dark Ages where there was very little evidence of any sort of activity related to the truth. And another more recent question similar to that is, how do we account for the last 100 years of the activity of the Watchtower Society and Jehovah's Witnesses if, in fact, 1914 was not the year that the kingdom came to power? So rather than consider these questions separately, I think it would be important to sort of situate ourselves in the stream of time in history. And instead of looking at individual acts, such as what is going on now in the Middle East with this ISIS bunch, how does that fit into world history over the course of the last few hundred years, say? Because if we really want to understand what's going on, we have to have a broader historical perspective. There are certain powers that be that wish we wouldn't have that broad view, that we just look at individual things and consider them to be isolated, random occurrences that are not related to anything. And God forbid if we ever start going down that road of the conspiracy theorists who think that there might be some master plan behind these events. Really, we could take it all the way back to the Garden of Eden, because that's really an event that occurred then, set us on the course that we are on now. And the issues that were brought up in Eden have not really been settled yet. So when we look at the world and the chaos it's in and the wars, keep in mind that there is only really one war. There is the war between Jehovah and Satan, the devil. And those who are for Jehovah are at enmity with those who are for Satan. And really, isn't that what Jehovah said, the so-called the very first prophecy in Eden, where he spoke to this serpent as if it were the real force behind the lie that Eve believed? He said, "I shall put enmity between you and the woman and between your seed and her seed. And you will bruise him in the heel," that is the seed of the woman, "and he will bruise you in the head." Okay, well, we know that Christ is the seed of the woman and The heel bruising was when Satan had Jesus put to death. And it's likened to a heel wound because it wasn't fatal. It wasn't fatal in the sense that Jesus stayed dead. He was wounded in death, and then Jehovah brought him back. But the last part of that prophecy has not been fulfilled yet. Christ has not bruised the serpent on the head. And that is symbolic of the complete crushing of Satan, first his world that he is God of, and then of him himself. And Paul pointed out in various books, Galatians, for example, if you belong to Christ, you really are Abraham's seed. And in his concluding words to the Romans, he said, the God of peace will crush Satan under your feet shortly. So those who belong to Christ are also part of this seed, and they will participate in the crushing of Satan. So, with that in mind, what has Jehovah done for these past 2,000 years? Christianity started out with a big bang, did it not? The apostles were empowered with miraculous powers. They could raise the dead just like Jesus and miraculously heal people. But they were particularly zealous in preaching the good news. And for example, the book of Acts chronicles the missionary tour of Paul and Barnabas and the congregations they established. But after that initial surge, what happened? Well, Paul foretold that wicked men would come after him, and they would not treat the flock with kindness, and they would draw off the disciples to follow them. And Paul wrote to Timothy that in the latter days, people will fall away from the faith, giving heed to inspired utterances and teachings of demons that teach lies. So really, that first century Christianity was engulfed and submerged into what we know as Christendom, and the truth was completely obscured. But Jehovah's purpose, as I had mentioned, was to gather those who belong to Christ, who are going to be part of this kingdom. So it started off in the first century, but then the calling and choosing virtually stopped. It's interesting, though, that in all of Paul's letters and Peter and John, they all referred to the coming of Christ as if it would be in their lifetime. Well, detractors might say, well, excuse me, that's because they were simply wrong. They were misguided. They didn't know what they were talking about. They created this heightened anticipation, and Jesus didn't show up, so Christianity is a hoax. But really, it was Jesus himself who created that anticipation. And what's the opening words of Revelation say? This is a revelation that God gave to Jesus to show his slaves the things that must shortly take place. Shortly. That was in the first century. And Jesus spoke to those seven congregations mentioned in Revelation that actually existed in the first century as literal congregations. The congregation in Ephesus, for example, and Philadelphia. And Jesus warned them to stay awake, to be faithful, because he was coming upon them as a thief in the night. The point is that the Bible perspective does not even recognize this 2,000-year gap because the anointing virtually ceased. Now, Jehovah probably did anoint a few individuals here and there because some of them stood out in their courage to stand up against orthodoxy. For example, John Wycliffe, who was one of the original translators of Latin into English, or actually, I think the Greek and Hebrew into English. At any rate, we don't know for sure, but they certainly had a profound impact upon history and may have been chosen by Jehovah for that purpose, probably were. But at any rate, the point is, the Bible, the Gospels, and you might say the prophets as well, it's sort of a seamless connection between the first century and the second coming of Jesus, even though it's been hundreds of years. So where does the Watchtower fit into all this? Well, Charles Russell and those original Bible students reestablished the primitive truth, the doctrinal truth that the first century Christians had, and an anointing resumed. Persons had a heavenly hope, regardless of all the, you know, foolishness associated with it and the 1914 doctrine, which is also foretold in Scripture, as I mentioned many, many, many times, that it's a foretold deluding influence that Jehovah would allow preceding the actual manifestation of Jesus. So that's where we are. Jehovah is now nearing completion of his purpose to gather together persons who are going to be associated with Jesus in his kingdom. And there will be a few thousand of those chosen ones on the earth when the kingdom comes. Yeah? And so Satan is always intent on resisting the accomplishment of Jehovah's purpose by whatever means he's capable of. And that's why we read in the history of the Israelites, all the wars that occurred, where Satan was constantly trying to overthrow what Jehovah had established, because he knew at some point that God would produce the Messiah. And he tried to kill the Messiah, Jesus, while he was a babe. Huh? But obviously, Jehovah accomplished his purpose in connection with presenting the world with the Messiah back then. But now we're close to the time when the kingdom is going to come to power. Forget about the fact that the Watchtower says the kingdom came to power in 1914. That's not true. But it doesn't negate the fact that it is close. It is coming. Jehovah's Witnesses will have to make an adjustment. Well, how does all this tie in with what's going on in the world today with ISIS or a civil war in Ukraine or the saber-rattling talk of nuclear war? Well, let's go back a few hundred years, approximately 600 years, to the so-called Renaissance, if you want to be precise. Satan had pretty much a stranglehold on Europe because that's where Christianity, the form of Christianity, the bastardized form of Christianity existed. And so he had a chokehold on it. But men began to break free from that stranglehold. And they began to develop ideas about self-governance and breaking free from the shackles of Pope and King. But they couldn't quite do it in Europe. So when the New World was discovered by Columbus and subsequent explorers, progressive thinkers then realized that their only hope of really breaking free was in the New World, with an ocean between them and the monarchies and the Pope and the King of England, who was also the Pope, you might say, the head of the Church of England. So many of those first colonists to the New World were escaping church persecution, the Puritans and the Pilgrims. And they established a nation with freedom of religion and Of course, Jehovah's Witnesses are the ultimate beneficiaries of that freedom. And Jehovah has used that to accomplish a phase of his work. But those kingdoms of Europe, the monarchies, the oligarchies, they've never accepted the idea that humans are made in the image of God and that they have an equal footing with the aristocracy. They view themselves as a superior breed with a divine right to rule over the lower species of animals called humans. And so there has been a war between this oligarchical view of man and the view of man that was born out of the Renaissance, which is based, of course, on the scripture that man is made in the image of God. Particularly after the United States was formed and declared its independence from the British crown, there has been a war to recapture the United States as part of the empire and to destroy this notion of the nation state and the dignity of man. And that is the grand conspiracy. And everything that occurs in the world is usually in some way related to, connected to the drive to reestablish empire and to crush the system of nation states that were born out of the Renaissance. For example, of course, we know that the United States fought the Revolutionary War, and then there was the War of 1812, in which the British actually burned down the White House. One of their schemes was during the Civil War, they of course, the British system of usury and slavery was, you know, the primary means of income for the people in the southern United States, the plantation holders primarily. So they had a vested interest in promoting that system, and they did, in fact, side with the Confederacy. And the British Navy was going to get involved to blockade the northern ports to prevent the Union from equipping and arming themselves. And Tsar Nicholas of Russia told London that if you do that, Russia will get involved on the side of Lincoln. And so the British didn't blockade the northern ports. And as a result, the Union was preserved. But the year after the Civil War, 1866, the Ku Klux Klan was formed, primarily from Confederate officers. And it was an offshoot of Scottish Rite masonry, which the empire uses to infiltrate whatever nation or organization it has targeted. The reason I bring that up, because the questioner had asked about ISIS, you look at the similarity between the Ku Klux Klan and ISIS. Well, it's a stark contrast if you look at it in black and white, literally. The Ku Klux Klan were hooded in white, whereas ISIS are hooded in black. But the point is, they're both hooded, and they're both terrorist operations. They don't go to war on an even battlefield. They kill people that are unarmed, and they create terror and chaos. The Ku Klux Klan, I mean, they burned down schools and hospitals and lynched black men. The connection is that the empire is using these terrorists today. Let me explain a little more, though. After the Civil War, and a lot of this I'm just speaking off the cuff, that I've already written in some detail about it in the book Jove Himself Has Become King, in the chapter on the King of the North. But a lot of people that I think have, you know, read my material, they still have a hard time understanding, well, I thought America and Britain were allies. Well, that's only an appearance, isn't it? It's really two different systems. Anyway, after the Civil War, the United States really blossomed, and Lincoln had put them on a trajectory. It was his idea to build, you know, the system of railroads and the intercontinental railroad to unite the entire nation from coast to coast to prevent any other colonial powers from trying to take over the unsettled western parts. And then the Industrial Revolution really did revolutionize the country, and that revolution was exported to other nations, and they began to emulate the American model. And this was very worrisome to the empire, because they want to have absolute control and dominance, and it was becoming increasingly more difficult for them to do that. So they realized that they had to do a couple of things. One was destroy the nations that were adopting the American model, primarily Japan, China, Russia. Sergei Witte in Russia, about the time of the First World War, he had convinced the Tsar to build a Trans-Siberian railway modeled after the United States transcontinental railway. Any rate, so the British orchestrated World War I to prevent the development of Europe, Russia, and the Middle East. But prior to that, they realized that they couldn't militarily defeat the United States. And so they began a conspiracy, a scheme to subvert the United States, to take it over from within, politically and economically. And in order to do that, they established originally a think tank, the Fabian Society in the late 1800s was the think tank that from it came a lot of these schemes. One was to develop, well, first, after the sinking of the Lusitania, of course, and during World War I, then the United States came in on the side of Great Britain and France. And right after the war, Britain wanted to establish this League of Nations and use it as a fulcrum to leverage itself as a world power. But the United States Senate still had this strong nationalistic impulse, and they said no. So the United States was not even a member of the League of Nations. The Watchtower seems to have overlooked that fact. So that was a big setback for Europe, for the European oligarchy. So they established, after this League of Nations fiasco, a Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. And the purpose of this council was to promote British foreign policy, imperialism, and to override this American nationalism. Its sister organization in London is the Royal Institute for International Affairs. So over the decades, and of course other think tanks have sprung up in the United States since then for the purpose of destroying the idea of the American Republic and replacing it and replacing the United States as this leading proponent of the nation-state system and using it as the hammer for their empire. The Lords of London, they consider themselves the brains and the United States is the brawn. Well, back during the 1800s, during the heyday of the Victorian Empire, the British were all over the map, literally, and they drew up the map, including the modern nations that we know as Afghanistan and Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia and the little nations like Qatar and Kuwait. And British influence has been evident in the Middle East from the middle of the 1800s. And they promoted this radical form of Sunni Islam called Wahhabism. Yeah. Well, after the Second World War, or excuse me, after the First World War, the Ottoman Empire had been in control of much of the Middle East. And so with the defeat of the Austria-Hungary Ottoman Empire, the British awarded themselves the prize territories. And Saudi Arabia became a province or a colony, you might say, of the British Empire. And they created some other nations. Qatar became a British protectorate, was given its independence in 1971, but it and Bahrain and Kuwait are kingdoms that are joined at the hip with the British monarchy. Back during the so-called Cold War, the Russians had invaded Afghanistan. And to thwart them, the United States and Britain and their intelligence apparatus recruited some of these Sunnis, and they armed them and trained them and called them the Mujahideen. And they used them against the Soviets in Afghanistan. In fact, there's a YouTube video from that time. It shows Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was Jimmy Carter's security advisor. He's in Afghanistan, and he's talking with this Mujahideen. And by the way, Osama bin Laden was part of that original Mujahideen. He was a Saudi, too, by the way. And so here was Brzezinski telling them that God was on their side in this fight against godless communists. Well, the Soviet Union went out of business and broke up. And the empire really didn't have an enemy after that. So they invented one, really, radical Islam. So this Mujahideen, they needed some work. They repackaged them as Al-Qaeda. And they were responsible, of course, for the 9/11 attack that destroyed the Twin Towers and nearly destroyed the Pentagon. And of course, it was all pinned on Osama bin Laden. But do you know, to this day, there was a study performed, you know, by the Congress, a commission, they call it, that investigated the entire 9/11 episode. And there's some 28 pages of this. I don't know how many hundreds of pages the report is, but 28 pages have been redacted and are considered completely classified. And the original President Bush, or the son, President Bush, and Obama have both refused to release it, even though Obama promised the 9/11 families that he would. He hasn't. And one senator who was on this commission and who's read the 28 pages said there's nothing here that would affect the national security of the United States. What those 28 pages reveal is that prominent Saudi Arabian families were the primary organizers and funders for the 9/11 attack. And of course, the British are, the Saudis are basically their conduit for this. So do you realize the profundity of this? That presidents of the United States are concealing who the real enemies of their nation are. And it's just simply mind-blowing. But that's how corrupt. I guess we'd have to say that the empire has succeeded in taking over the government of the United States. At any rate, where did this ISIS outfit come from? I mean, no one had heard of them a couple of years ago, right? But think back a few years. Of course, after 9/11, the United States went off and invaded Afghanistan, right? Even though all the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia and a couple from Yemen, I think. But none of them were Taliban or Afghanistan. Afghanis, I should say. And then the next year they went off and invaded Iraq, which had nothing whatsoever to do with terrorism. You know, Saddam Hussein was a secularist. He was as much against radical Islam as the United States, seemingly. But what happened? They destroyed Iraq. And now you have all these puzzled commentators and, you know, where did these terrorists come from? They had this brutal dictator and we got rid of that guy for him. But we just don't understand why, you know, Iraq has become this hotbed, you know, for recruiting these ISIS guys. Same thing in Libya. Gaddafi actually, you know, really tried to help Libyans increase their standard of living. He helped a lot of other African countries, too, with his oil wealth. But he was targeted as a bad guy. They took him out. And now, you know, again, these puzzled commentators can't figure out why the Libyans just can't seem to get their country together. Well, come on. It was mission accomplished. They were charted for destruction. The destruction of Libya and Iraq was intentional. And now the intelligence apparatus of the Anglo-American Saudis are using those collapsed countries as a recruiting ground, training ground for their terrorist operations. Ultimately, you recall a couple of years ago, remember in September, I think it was 2013, it was Syria was the bad guy, you know, and had to get rid of Assad because he used poison gas or something. Yeah. That was a lie, just like Saddam had nuclear weapons. I mean, that total lies. Anyway, Obama was going to start the bombing like within a week, and Putin stood up and the Chinese as well, and he backed down. So they shifted apparently their strategy to use terrorists to destroy Syria. And ultimately they want to destroy Iran as well. They're Shia Muslim and these Wahhabi radicals are Sunni, even though the Wahhabis also consider some of the Sunnis to be, you know, apostates. But they're simply being used by the empire for what purpose? To destroy nations. To put this ISIS thing in perspective, I think it was 93 was the first so-called Gulf War. Saddam Hussein had complained that the Kuwaitis were slant drilling and drawing oil from Iraqi territory. And so he asked the ambassador, I think the gal named April Gillespie, what the United States would do if he invaded Kuwait. And she said they wouldn't do anything. And so he took her at her word, of course it was a lie, and he invaded Kuwait. And then President Bush, then that was his moment to stand up and say, this will not stand. And it was a big military confrontation, shock and awe on Baghdad. Some of you probably don't even remember that. It's been 22 years ago now. Huh? But the point I wanted to make, that the Iraqis withdrew from Kuwait and it was one long highway out of Kuwait and a big long caravan of military vehicles and, you know, Iraqis going back home. And the United States came in with their A-10 Warthog tank killing machines, which basically just a big, huge machine gun with an airplane wrapped around it. And it can fly real slow and shoot these bullets. They're about a foot long, and it goes right through everything, tank, you know, whatever. Anyway, it was a big shining moment for the U.S. military because they slaughtered this entire Iraqi convoy, and there were gruesome pictures of it on the news for days afterwards, of incinerated bodies and blown up vehicles, and hundreds of vehicles. I mean, they were just literally sitting ducks, you know. Anyway, you see these pictures now of these ISIS guys, you know, in their hoods and the black flag of terror, and they're in these little pickup trucks running around in the desert on these long convoys, you know, and the politicians and news media are saying, oh, these guys are as horrible, they're taking over the Middle East. And I just heard a talking head quoting a government official today saying that, you know, this problem of ISIS can't be solved just by killing people. Well, the question is, why not? That's always been the tried and true method. I mean, you can get on Google Earth and look anywhere in the world practically. There are some areas that are off limits, but you can see quite a bit of detail. I mean, you can pick out cars and homes and little blurs of things that are actually people. And that is not exactly cutting-edge technology. I mean, the United States, and I'm sure other countries, have satellite technology. But they can see you, you know, in great detail. So here you have these convoys of these ISIS guys apparently coming and going as they please, and they can't do anything about it. There's supposedly only 10,000 or 17,000 of these ISIS guys, and they can't take them out as soon as they pop their head up. Who believes this nonsense? Well, apparently most people do. They don't stop and think. I mean, we can't kill them all. That's not the answer. Well, it's nonsense. They could. I'm not advocating that, but I'm just saying this is the stuff that we're being fed, that people believe, that, you know, what's going on in the world. You know, what does the scripture say about the fierce-looking king? He makes deception succeed, and he keeps throwing truth to the earth. I mean, you really have to hand it to the propagandists now. I mean, they have really done a number on people. There's a war going on, and people don't even know it. They fabricate an enemy that, you know, the United States is supposed to be fighting against. It's actually, you know, it's actually their weapon. Yeah. Brilliant, as they would say, right? Anyway, let me read to you something that was published in the intelligence magazine that I read, Executive Intelligence Review. This was published back in January 2014, so just a little over a year ago. It says, British Imperial Forces, through their Saudi terrorist apparatus, launched a new phase of warfare against Russia at the end of 2013. Over December 29th and 30th, two suicide bombings ripped the southern city of Volgograd, killing 17 and wounding 40. It goes on to say, while the Saudi role in the expanding campaign of asymmetric warfare against Russia is well documented, there is an equally significant British hand behind the destabilization and war provocations. For more than a decade, the British have been promoting recruitment to the Chechen separatist cause through mosques in the UK, facilitating the training of recruits in Afghanistan and the flow of Chechen jihadist fighters into Syria, who are in turn migrating back to southern Russia after combat experience in the civil war against the Assad government. In 2000, Moscow filed a number of diplomatic protests to the British government over open recruitment of Islamist terrorists at mosques throughout the UK. Earlier this year, Saudi Arabia's intelligence chief and 9/11 sponsor, Prince Bandar bin Sultan, reportedly threatened to unleash Wahhabi terrorism against Russia in a meeting in Moscow with President Putin unless Russia agreed to support the overthrow of Syria's President Assad. So I hope you get the point there that this ISIS outfit, the same as its predecessors, Al-Qaeda and the Mujahideen, they are an arm, an extension of the empire. They're basically mercenaries that the empire uses in asymmetrical warfare against the nation states. You see, the empire is above the nation states. It's supranational, like its banking arm. Take a look at HBSC, the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, that the biggest bank in Britain. It was set up by the British in Hong Kong as an offshore staging area for their importation of opium into China back in the 1800s. And it has been caught, I don't know how many times, doing the same thing, laundering money, supplying illegal arms. And just last week, they fessed up that they've been helping wealthy clients conceal money in Switzerland to avoid paying taxes. But do any of these bankers ever go to jail? Do their banking operations ever get shut down by authorities? No. Why not? Because they're above the law. At least they think they are. And the problem is, I mean, the nation states, if they wanted to assert their authority, they could shut them down. And that's what the empire is afraid of. And that's why they're going now to move to destroy the nation state system and to implement this new world order, a global government. And that's what the Bible prophecy is pointing forward to. And so this is not some little isolated thing. We're on the edge of what is to be the crash overthrow of the present system, because Jehovah will allow it now that he's apparently finished with the work that he's used the watchtower to do. And we'll open up a new phase with the coming of Christ. But it will be a much different world then. Anyway, don't believe too much of what you see on television or hear in the news or read in the paper, because it's all filtered through the empire's editors, you might say. And none of them really have a very clear grasp upon, you know, what's happening. If they do, then they're not mainstream media. They're relegated to the alternative media. So anyway, I think my voice is about to the finish line here. Excuse me for rambling on here, but hey, it happens. If you have questions, let me know, and I'll consider them in the next program. Until then, may Jehovah bless your search for the truth.